You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Saturday. Unfortunately, if you're listening to this podcast, the odds are it's not as happy as it could be because the Rockets enter the weekend on a two-game losing streak, punctuated by Friday night's 136-122 loss in Denver, in which the Rockets were largely uncompetitive yet again on the defensive end of the floor. With that, welcome in to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary, for better or for worse, on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Saturday morning, the Rockets are a few hours from taking the court yet again. This is night two of their road back-to-back, Friday in Denver, Saturday in Utah, both games at altitude. The good news with that is that the Rockets will have an opportunity to get right, to get the bad taste out of their mouths from two consecutive losses and giving up 136 in Denver. The bad is that it doesn't get much easier. The odds are, while not confirmed, you probably won't have Chris Paul on night two of the road back-to-back, trying to manage him as he recovers from the hamstring injury. And beyond that, even though Denver, with the win, they improved to 36-15, tied for the best record in the Western Conference, it's not like the Jazz are any slouch. Right now, the Rockets, who with Friday night's loss fell to 29-22, they're basically in a statistical tie with the Jazz for the sixth seed in the West, and the Jazz and are much more hot than the Rockets are, having won 8 of their last 10 games. So as far as today's show on Saturday, we will be doing our usual 3 points recap, but it's going to be a little non-traditional in that we're not going to spend all 3 segments on the Denver Nuggets game, number one, because it wouldn't be very fun, and secondly, because of the short shelf life, because we do have another Rockets game just a few hours away, whatever happens as far as our analysis right now, it's going to be quickly outdated by whatever happens on the court Saturday night. So we'll discuss the Denver game leading off, and then the final 2 segments, we'll discuss a new wave of trade and buyout rumors, more specifically DeAndre Jordan and Wes Matthews as new possibilities since our initial trade deadline preview show on Thursday. If you want more on that, check out our archives at LockedOnRockets.com. And where DeAndre Jordan and Wes Matthews could conceivably fit with the Rockets, addressing their needs, and also a little bit of talk at the roster moves that the Rockets might need to make to actually fit them, not just from a basketball standpoint, but to actually logistically get them on this team. So we'll do that to close out the show. To begin with, though, we'll look at Friday night's game, the 136-122 loss, and to put it simply, the Nuggets are just a better team. 36-15, the Rockets are 29-22, there's a 7-game gap for a reason, and that gap is even more pronounced if the Rockets do not have Clint Capella. Now, James Harden did score 30 points or more for a 25th consecutive game. I believe that's the 3rd longest streak in NBA history, tying Wilt Chamberlain. But ultimately, this was not a great game for Harden. He scored 9 points in the 4th quarter in garbage time. The Rockets were uncompetitive to technically keep that streak alive. But honestly, it was not a game that I think James will want to remember. He started well, 5 of 6 in the first period, 13 points, and that's when the Rockets got off to a 45-35 lead. But for the game as a whole, he was minus 24, which was by far the worst plus-minus on the Rockets. I thought the motion offense from Denver exposed him a lot as far as ball watching. There were far too many cuts to the basket, or in some cases with Jokic's ability to pass, it was a shooter being able to pop out to the corner or to the wing. That Harden's lack of awareness, maybe there's some fatigue in there, just was not able to account for. And perhaps some of this is residual from the incredibly high burden he's had to take on in his historic December and January. We've talked a lot about this insane stretch. Well, the last couple of games, to me, that's when we've seen by far the most evidence of him not having that extra gear to call on. And maybe Chris Paul can fill the gap. The good news, this was by far Chris's best game since coming back. 20 points, 6 assists, just 1 turnover, 8 of 13 from the field, 3 of 7 from behind the arc. He seems to have it going. He may not be available Saturday night, but the good news, if he can continue that level of play and he's shooting better than 53% from the field in the 3 games since coming back, the Rockets may need that because James Harden, both defensively and offensively, again, 9 of 21, but really he started 5 of 6, missed 10 of his next 11 shots. And the only reason why his overall numbers look respectable, 9 of 21, is because he heated up again in garbage time, which let that 30-point streak stay alive. And as far as the tired theme goes, I don't think it's all that surprising that Harden's strongest quarter by far was the first, and perhaps also the end of the game, because what's unique about those periods? Well, the first is when you're most fresh. The Rockets did enter on two consecutive off days, so when he had the most in the tank, that was when he played the best. And of course, at the end of the game, the Nuggets are trying to bleed out the clock. They're not as active on the offensive side of the floor, so Harden is not having to expend as much energy on both ends of the court. So to me, you are seeing some signs of fatigue. Is it going to last the entire season? No. I think especially for someone as well-conditioned as Harden, he will get a second win. But despite what he's been doing over the past 6 weeks or so, he is human. You are starting to see some of the mileage effects. And unfortunately, for the Rockets, especially in this stretch without Clint Capella, so much of their issues had been masked simply by Harden going God mode, scoring 50-plus, in the case of the Madison Square Garden game, 60-plus, and that offsetting so many of these other issues. Well, now that you have a still good, but certainly not great Harden, now you compound that with everything else that's going on, especially on the defensive end of the floor, and the Rockets are not able to win basketball games, especially against really good teams like the Denver Nuggets. And let's give them a ton of credit. They have so much depth, even without the likes of Jamal Murray and Gary Harris. Well, you can just throw Malik Beasley into the starting lineup, and he leads everyone in scoring with 35 points on 12 of 17 from the field. Nikola Jokic, MVP candidate for a reason, 31 points, 13 rebounds, 9 assists. The Rockets had beaten Denver 9 consecutive times entering Friday night's game, and I still, should these teams play in the playoffs, if both are healthy, I still think it's a very favorable matchup for Houston. But the reason it especially was not on Friday, number one, I think Denver was very focused. They wanted to get the bad taste out of their mouths of all these losses that have mounted over the years to the Rockets. But beyond that, I think the one individual matchup that tilts Houston-Denver so much in the favor of the Rockets is the presence of Clint Capella. And it's not saying that Capella is that much better than Jokic, but it's the presence of Capella. It's what that does to collapse Denver's model. And without him, it just doesn't work the same. Because Capella is the one guy who has the combination of athleticism and toughness to give Jokic a lot of problems. On the offensive end of the floor, especially when you have Chris Paul and James Harden, two elite guards, handling the ball and running the pick and roll, Capella's ability to finish through contact inside, his athleticism to play the lob game, it's tough for Jokic to match up with that. And then on the defensive end of the floor, Capella is strong enough, he doesn't get bullied on the low block, but he's athletic enough to recover. And even if the Nuggets, with their seemingly endless supply of quick guards, you mentioned just throwing Malik Beasley into the starting lineup, and then he ends up with a game-high 35 points, well, Capella's presence at the rim as a rim protector, his ability to recover quickly, it's not as if the Nuggets are as capable of breaking down your defense. With Kenneth Faried, who starts at the center spot now, you can get some of the same advantages offensively. He had 23 points, 9 of 13 from the field, but defensively at 6'8", just 6 rebounds, he's nowhere near big enough, no block shots, and there's also the issue, because Faried is so new, there's not the same trust that the Rockets teammates have in him because he's still learning the switching scheme as far as the rotations. It was just far too easy for the Rockets, or for the Nuggets, that is, against the Rockets, to collapse the defense. And Clint Capella as the anchor, he's a unique breed in that with Jokic, he can either overpower a lot of guys or he can outthink them because he's so intelligent. He's such a good passer. Clint Capella is one of the few guys that he can't because Clint is so tough. He's so physical. Athletically, he's able to hang as far as the ball movement. Clint is a pretty smart player, but his athleticism also helps him recover when they're in these transition sequences or scrambles, I should say. And then on the other end of the floor, he's athletic enough, especially when you pair him with Chris Paul and James Harden, to punish Jokic, who, for all of his gifts, is not exactly fleet of foot on the defensive end of the floor. While Kenneth Faried can provide a few of those dynamics on the offensive end, he's nowhere near as balanced an overall player as Clint Capella is. That, to me, the fact that Capella, I don't know if neutralize is the right word, but he can collapse what the Denver model is, in my opinion, which starts with Nikola Jokic at the five. Kenneth Faried can't do that. And so because of that, even though I wouldn't say Clint Capella is the Rockets' best player, of course, he's not close to that with James Harden healthy and on the roster. But against Denver, in terms of the Rockets' success over the years, Capella is by far the most important piece, I think, to what the Rockets do from a success standpoint against the Nuggets because of what he means for Denver's model. Without him, the Rockets, they're not a good defensive team. They haven't been all season long. Now you take away their rim protector, their top rebounder, and it got ugly, 83 points in the first half. Rebounding battle, 36-30, which not as many rebounds go around because both teams shot the ball so well. The Rockets 53% from the field, over 36% from three, but the Nuggets for the game, over 62% shooting and better than 45% from three. Still won the rebounding battle, but overall, the Rockets just couldn't deny dribble penetration. The Nuggets collapsed their defense with ease, and Denver, especially without Clint Capella, is just simply the better basketball team. It's not that there were no highlights for the Rockets. As mentioned, Chris Paul had a good game, 20 points, 8 of 13 from the field, 6 assists. In terms of ultimately getting where the Rockets want to go, getting Chris Paul right is an enormous first step. So it's not that there are no positives, but by and large, there's no point to dwelling on this game. There's a reason Denver is tied for the number one seed in the West. There's a reason why they have a 7-game lead on the Rockets in the standings. They're just a better basketball team, especially if Houston does not have Clint Capella. Tip your hat, move on, and get back to it Saturday night in Utah. Now, as promised, for the remainder of Saturday's show, we're going to turn our attention to some off-court items because this is a week in which we're going to have a lot of off-court news to discuss, I suspect. That being because next Thursday at 2 p.m. Houston time is the NBA's annual midseason trade deadline. And the Rockets, of course, they expect to be better than the 29 and 22 mark that they have at the moment. With Chris Paul and James Harden in their primes, Chris Paul in the last year or two of his, certainly Daryl Morey is trying to optimize this season by doing everything that he can possibly do to give the Rockets a chance to compete for a title in the postseason. So between the deadline itself and the wave of buyouts that inevitably happens right after that, the weekend after a year ago was when the Rockets added Joe Johnson and Brandon Wright. Guys get bought out if they're not traded, because the teams would prefer to trade them and get some value first. If they don't, then they'll let them go by buyout. So either way, the Rockets are likely to make moves next week. We've heard from Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle. We did a preview show on Thursday examining his story, saying the Rockets are optimistic they're going to make a deal. The priority, according to Jonathan, from the Rockets' point of view, is to get a forward who can help, not just as a shooter, because everyone other than maybe at the five spot needs to be able to shoot in a Mike D'Antoni system. But beyond that, to be able to rebound, give them some more length. Right now, the only power forward in the Rockets roster, honestly, is P.J. Tucker, who's 6'6" and 33 years old. So you bring another power forward who can potentially dial down P.J.'s minutes a little bit. He's been averaging nearly 36 per game. And then, more importantly, just provide some more depth, another rebounder up front. Because when it comes to what's been going on for the Rockets and their defensive issues, they predate the current injury to Clint Capella. Now, the Rockets are expecting to get Capella back. One piece of good news from the road trip, Clint is traveling with them. So they've got 6 more games. They're 5-4 through the first 9. And side note on that front, if you're really upset about the Rockets right now, you should probably be more upset about the Brooklyn game, which you blew the 7- and 8-point leads late in regulation and in overtime. And then the New Orleans game, in which they had Jrue Holiday and basically nothing else. 4 starters out, 5 of your top 6 scorers all out injured in that game for the Pelicans. If you win just one of the Brooklyn or New Orleans games, you'd be 6-3 through this first 9-game stretch without Clint Capella, which ultimately you're trying to stay afloat. If you can go 8-7, we're expecting him to miss 15 games and then be ready on the other side of the All-Star break. I think he's certainly trending well if he's traveling with the team. Well, ultimately, the Denver game isn't one that you should feel too badly about. They're just a better team, especially on the road, and the Rockets lacking Clint Capella. What you should be upset about is blowing the New Orleans game, the Brooklyn game a couple of weeks ago, although the Nets did make some incredible shots. That, to me, is the bigger theme as the Rockets try and navigate this week to 10 days that they have left without Clint Capella. Anyway, though, getting back to our plan discussion, the reason I brought up Capella was to note that even though he's out now, many of the issues with rebounding, they predate that thumb injury to Clint. They've been present all year long, and so when you're trying to diagnose what's most wrong with the Rockets' defense, even more so than perimeter stoppers, wing defense, it's the fact that they can't get rebounds, and too often it's the second chance points, guys being out of position after the first shot, that really kills them. And that's something that, especially with the Rockets, as the season moves along, maybe they want to get back more, depending on the matchup, to the switching scheme in which Capella, maybe if he gets in shape a bit more, I don't know if he'll be as good as he was a year ago, but he's only 1 year removed from when in the playoffs we saw him switching even against the Warriors. Well, if you want to get back to that, that means you're pulling Capella even more away from the bucket, and so you need other guys to be able to rebound more. So according to Jonathan Fagan, the need for the Rockets that they've identified is a forward, a Jermichael Green type from Memphis, who is supposed to be on the block, who has some shooting ability, but also has more length, more rebounding potential. So that could help. But when you're the Rockets under Daryl Morey, it's best player available. And even if it doesn't fit the exact need, or perhaps you can address the need one way and still potentially upgrade your team in other areas as well later, the Rockets are going to look at every opportunity to improve their team over this next week to 10 days leading up to the deadline. And beyond the deadline, I should say, in the case of buyouts. And when we did our preview show a couple of days ago on Thursday, we also discussed about the Daniel House Jr. contract standoff. Because the reason there's not been resolution on that, ultimately, I do believe the Rockets are going to bring him back unless he's used as part of a trade package. It makes no sense. He's out of days on his existing two-way to just let him languish at the G League level. That makes no sense when you've seen that he can contribute even as a starter at the NBA level in a season where you're desperate to win games. It's just a matter of, will he get the conversion that he wants to a one-year deal, House that is, or can the Rockets get him to the three-year deal that they want to keep him under club control because they do like him? If he's on a one-year deal, they won't have bird rights to retain him this summer. To this point, the Rockets have offered him a three-year deal at the league minimum. Perhaps House would be open to a multi-year deal, 2 or 3 years, if the Rockets offered him more than the minimum. The reason they have not done that, as we explained on Thursday, is because they don't want to tie up what limited funds above the minimum they have left, really about $3.5 million, that's what they have left of their taxpayer mid-level exception, because potentially they could use that in buyout season for players who get bought out from other teams, and who knows, maybe they want those players even more than House, or maybe it's close enough to where they'd rather have both, and at that point, they just bite the bullet and convert House to a one-year deal and use what's left of their mid-level exception on someone else. The bottom line is, even though it's been frustrating, I know it's been 2.5 weeks for the Rockets without Daniel House Jr., in which certainly he could have helped you in a lot of these games, especially with athleticism wing defense. The fact is, the Rockets have been patient because they want to see what's going to happen on the buyout market before potentially committing that money to Daniel House Jr. Well, their patience might be about to be rewarded because two new names, and they're pretty big ones, appear set to hit the buyout market in the weeks ahead, those being DeAndre Jordan, big man formerly of the Dallas Mavs, and Wes Matthews, swingman of the Dallas Mavs, both currently with the New York Knicks, because they were casualties of the trade that sent Kristaps Porzingis to Dallas. In order to give the Knicks incentive to do the deal, what Dallas had to do was take two bad contracts in Tim Hardaway Jr. and Courtney Lee, and then send to the Knicks Wes Matthews and DeAndre Jordan, who make $18.5 and about $22.5 million respectively, but they are expiring, which gives the Knicks the cap room that they're prioritizing and the ability to go after two max free agents this summer, potentially Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. So as far as the veterans are concerned, the reason they're likely to become available to this point, the Knicks have not said that they're going to buy them out. However, my guess is that it's posturing because they'd like to see if some team might trade a minor asset for one of them at the deadline, future second round picks, whatever it may be. And then on the other side, if they're not dealt, I do think they'll get bought out. And my guess is that they're buyouts rather than traded guys, because ultimately the salaries are so high, again, close to $20 million for each of them, that with the Knicks prioritizing cap room, the only way the Knicks would do a deal is to get expiring salaries back. Well, how many teams could A, use one of those two players, and B, have $20 million in expiring salaries to make the math work just laying around? It's not impossible, but there aren't very many teams that fit the bill. So ultimately, my guess is that even though the Knicks are saying right now that they plan on keeping those guys, it's posturing until next Thursday's deadline. And then after that, if those two players ask out, and I think it's highly probable, the Knicks are about 30 games under 500. There's no reason to keep veterans on expiring deals because they can leave you and probably will after the season anyway. So they're not a part of your long-term plans. They want to win. They're both 30 years old in the case of DeAndre, 32 years old in the case of Wes Matthews. Veterans on expiring deals don't languish on teams that are 30 games under 500 at this juncture. The Knicks are bad, and ultimately, if they ask out, it's the right thing to do for the player, and also for the Knicks as an organization, because they are prioritizing cap space this summer. I don't think they want to double-cross a player and especially his influential agent. If the agent asks the Knicks to let their player out, their expiring veteran, I can't see the Knicks saying no. So ultimately, I think both Jordan and Wes Matthews will hit the market later in February, and the Rockets are very well positioned because they have not just the minimum, but the majority of the mid-level exception. They didn't panic. They didn't initially give it already to Daniel House Jr. So because of that, there is a financial means that even if the bidding is competitive and other contenders want them, the Rockets, at least for one and perhaps for both, will have ways that they can appeal both from a playing time perspective and financially by offering them more money. So this is why the Rockets did not panic initially and give that big deal to Daniel House Jr., whatever's left of their mid-level exception. They were patient, and now they might be about to be rewarded with a couple of players and DeAndre Jordan and Wes Matthews hitting the market. And who knows, over the next 5 days until the deadline, there might be even more big names. Stay tuned. So yes, the Rockets have a path to one of those players, and even though they don't fit that true need for a rebounding four, which is what Jonathan Fagan identified, at the same time, with limited resources, which the Rockets have, being over the cap and in luxury tax territory, you can't turn down an upgrade, however it might present itself. So the Rockets are well positioned. They could strike a deal. However, I don't think it's a given that the Rockets go after either player, especially both, and I'll explain why in the third segment, because it's not just about the basketball fit, it's also about the roster fit. So as we finish up Saturday's program discussing the Wes Matthews and DeAndre Jordan buyout possibilities, we began the show in segment one recapping a very blah 136-122 loss the Rockets suffered in Denver on Friday night, giving up 83 points in the first half, 136 for the game. It is what it is. The more interesting note, we know what the Rockets' flaws are, is can they improve their roster moving forward? The deadline is 5 days away, and then you have the wave of buyouts that happens with guys who are not traded, veterans usually on expiring deals, in the next 2 to 3 days following the deadline. Two names that have been linked to Houston in the past are DeAndre Jordan and Wes Matthews, traded from the Mavs to the Knicks. The Knicks, a bad team. They don't really seem to have use for veterans that are 30 and 32 years old. There have already been media reports from various sources that the Rockets could have interest in one or both of DeAndre Jordan and Wes Matthews. And because they have not used what's left of their mid-level exception to this point on Daniel House Jr., then conceivably you could, at least for one of them, splurge. And even if there's competition, give them a richer offer to make sure that they come to Houston. And the first question when we look at this is, well, why? How do they upgrade your rotation? And let's quickly look at that. With DeAndre Jordan, he's averaging 11 points and close to 14 rebounds per game. So he certainly helps you from a rebounding perspective. He's close to 7 feet tall. He's a lot bigger than Kenneth Faried, who currently projects as your backup center once Clint Capella is back. Now, there are some metrics that do not grade out DeAndre Jordan all that favorably. He seems to have attention lapses on the defensive end of the floor. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe playing in a smaller role and on a contender in Houston, or a potential contender, at least one that has more talent on it than what he had in Dallas, would rejuvenate him and get him focused for what would be a 25-game closing stretch, roughly, and then a postseason run. So even though he's certainly not a forward who can space the floor, at the same time, he would help a team with rebounding that's been a bad rebounding team all year long. And I think he's certainly more agile, more spry than a 36-year-old Nene as far as your backup centers go. And Kenneth Faried, while he's more athletic, he's got that quick twitch dynamic, he can probably score more points. At the same time, there are just limitations based on Kenneth Faried's body being 6'8". If you put a guy in DeAndre Jordan who's basically 7 feet tall and averages 14 rebounds per game, he fixes a weakness that the Rockets have had all season long. So that's the upside to DeAndre Jordan. And as far as whether he would take the role in Houston, that's a fair question because it's a guy, he's just 30 years old, and he's going to be a free agent this summer. So he wants, I'm sure, another starting gig moving forward. And it's not clear that he would take a backup role. Now, he's certainly not going to take a role where he doesn't play. But if you want to be optimistic, you can point, of course, there are many ties between DeAndre Jordan and Houston. He's from here, played his college ball at Texas A&M. There have been lots of reports, including last summer from Kelly Eco of The Athletic, that Jordan was very interested in playing in Houston and trying to get his way to the Rockets. He's not better than Clint Capella, but ultimately, the thing at this point to remember is that he has had nearly a season's worth of data, 50 games, basically, of starting in Dallas. So as far as earning his next contract this summer, he does have tape already. He does have data in terms of this is what he can provide as a starter. So maybe for a small sample size, basically 25 games left in the regular season, plus a playoff run, he'd be willing to play off the bench. Certainly not going to do it for the remainder of his career, but maybe for one season, he'll take that run that he's been wanting for a long time to see if he can make it work in Houston. So from that standpoint, I could see DeAndre saying yes to the Rockets. And while it's not a given that he would upgrade your team, there have been some defensive lapses this year that are a little alarming. By and large, I think he probably does. On offense, he's not as explosive as he was earlier in his career, barely averaging over a block a game now, but he is still a good finisher on the lobs and the roll game. He's got experience with Chris Paul and Austin Rivers, so there's a lot of reasons to believe that he would be a good fit here. He's also worked hard on his free throws and is now in the upper 60s, like Clint Capella. Both of those guys used to be big liabilities at the free throw line, not anymore. So it would be limited minutes, but I think you could see a path to which, yes, even though he's not your need after acquiring Kenneth Faried, could he upgrade you if he's available and wants to come? Sure. With Wes Matthews, I think he could upgrade you as well, but I think there's a bit of a misnomer about what he would bring. Rockets fans know him a lot from his early career days in Portland, where he was a very tough defender on James Harden. At this point, at age 32, having coming off an Achilles tear a few years back, he's been passable, but he hasn't really been a good defender since the Achilles tear. And now at age 32, he's at a point where athleticism starts to slip a little bit. He's also at 6'5". While he's physical, he's tough, he's also not especially long. So he doesn't really fix your rebounding issues, your length, the things we discussed earlier. The reason Wes Matthews could upgrade you, he's a solid defender. He's probably better than Gerald Green on that front. But where he could really potentially help your rotation is that the last 2 years, he has shot 38% or better from three on more than six attempts per game. So a very high mark percentage-wise, and he's doing it on high volume. And of course, three-point shooting in a Rocket system under Mike D'Antoni that needs to space the floor, that is very, very important. You cannot have enough of that. So conceivably, he would upgrade your team. And the Rockets, to get him, because I'm sure he'll have other options, Oklahoma City stands out as a team, definitely with the Robertson injuries, that could use him. The question for Houston is, how do they get him? And beyond just offering money, probably more importantly than that, because he'd be playing for his next contract, they would have to offer him a role. They would have to sit him down and say, we are going to give you, I don't know if they'll promise an exact minutes total, but you'll be in our rotation, presumably replacing someone. So that, to me, is the question. And as far as Wes Matthews and the Rockets, again, he doesn't really fit that need for backup power forward. If you bring in Wes Matthews, it's because you see him as a better option as a floor spacer, especially from three and as a scorer, to someone that's currently in your rotation. The most likely candidates, as I see it, would be Gerald Green or James Ennis. Possibly a little bit of Austin Rivers, but I think Austin Rivers gets a longer leash because of his ability to handle the ball and his on-ball defense, although, boy, has his off-ball defense been lagging of late. But where it gets tough for both Jordan and for Wes Matthews is in the roster spots. And can the Rockets make this work? Because right now the Rockets do have an open roster spot, yes, but I think that's earmarked for Daniel House Jr. They're just waiting to figure out whether it's going to be a one-year deal, a three-year deal, how much money they have left. You've already seen Daniel House be not just a quality player, but a quality starting level player for this team. At least with new players, there are some concerns with how they fit. With Daniel House, you already know how he fits. So while there's a roster spot, I think that is ticketed for House. Beyond that, you could conceivably, if you don't make a trade, free up a roster spot by letting Marquese Chriss go. But there's the financial component and also the reality that you're probably using that. There have also been some reports of Brandon Knight to acquire a Jermichael Green type. So the odds are you're probably not going to have Marquese Chriss after the deadline to cut bait with to free a roster spot. And I also don't think that you're going to be letting Isaiah Hartenstein, Gary Clark, one of your young prospects go to sign of DeAndre Jordan, a Wes Matthews, or any veteran on a one-year deal. Because when you're looking at Hartenstein and Clark, those are guys young, under club control for 3 years. You're not going to let those go for a never-ending supply of veterans on one-year deals because there are only so many that you can actually play. My guess is in the playoffs, you're looking at probably an eight-man rotation, at the absolute most, nine. So it doesn't make sense to just load up the end of your bench with players all on veterans minimum one-year deals who you have no bird rights to this summer, because not all of them are even going to play. So you're not going to let Hartenstein or Clark go, guys that you have under control for two seasons beyond this one. So where I'm going with all of this, the trick is that you would probably have to eat money to clear another roster spot. In the case of DeAndre Jordan, for example, I don't see the Rockets having four active roster spots occupied by fives only. Capella, Nene, Fareed, and then DeAndre Jordan. You'd have to eat the money, in my opinion, and let go of Nene or Fareed. Probably Nene, because at least Fareed gives you a different dimension. You can mix and match depending on matchups. With Wes Matthews, my guess is that to free that roster spot, assuming your current one is ticketed for Danuel House Jr., one of the guys he'd be replacing, James Ennis, Gerald Green, you might have to let one of those guys go. And the reason that's not a given, number one, obviously those are players that have been in your rotation at various points this season. It's not easy to move on from guys like that. And more importantly, there's the financial aspect for the Rockets already in the luxury tax. How much is Tillman Fertitta willing to pay? Is he willing to add minimum deals on top of minimum deals? Because these are not Michael Carter-Williams. The deals are fully guaranteed at this point. Would he be willing to, let's say hypothetically, they sign DeAndre Jordan and to make room, they let Nene go. Is he willing to pay the existing Nene contract and then add DeAndre Jordan on top of that? Maybe he would. I hope he would, because I would argue it's in the best interest of the Rockets as a team, but it's a lot to ask, and it's not my money, and we certainly shouldn't treat it as a formality, or that, well, if DeAndre Jordan or Wes Matthews wants to come, then it's a given that they'll just move heaven and earth, and even if they have to let go of, you know, Nene, Fareed, James Ennis, Gerald Green, whoever it may be, to free up a roster spot, assuming the existing one is earmarked for Danuel House Jr., well, there's not just a basketball component to it, there's a financial one as well. So to me, while I think the Rockets are interested, depending on the circumstances, whether they would actually get to the finish line with one, let alone both, in my opinion, it's going to come down to exactly how much money that Tillman Fertitta is willing to invest. I hope he's willing to invest a lot. It'd be in the interest of the basketball team. Will he? Stay tuned. So to me, that's the component you need to keep your eyes peeled for. It's not just, can the Rockets use them? Do the Rockets have an interest in them or see them as a basketball upgrade? Does the player want Houston? All of those things are fair. And in the case of Jordan and Matthews, who have played most of the season in Dallas, Houston's a pretty easy move for their families, that sort of thing. So there's reason to believe the basketball fit for both sides is there. But from a roster standpoint, from a financial standpoint, there are other considerations at play. We'll see what happens the next few days. Who knows? Maybe, for example, you have another roster spot if you hypothetically deal, say, Marquise Chris and Nene for Jermichael Green in Memphis, then you also free up an extra roster spot. Maybe that's how it becomes more palatable to add one or both of those guys. But just keep that in the back of your mind. It's not just about the basketball. It's also about the roster and the finances of it. So while it could happen, it's far from a given. Just keep your eyes peeled, and who knows, there may be a trickle-down effect related to whatever happens at the deadline. Marquise Chris, Brandon Knight, all the rumors the Rockets have reportedly been involved in, watching Memphis a lot, with Jermichael Green, Garrett Temple, those types of players, Justin Holiday. We'll have to see what happens. DeAndre Jordan, Wes Matthews, they could be options, but it's far from a given. All I can say at this point, stay tuned. So with that, that's where we'll wrap up our Saturday morning episode. As always, I appreciate y'all very much for tuning in. And if you want more coverage, well, you don't have to wait long, because we will have another episode very quickly right here at Locked On Rockets on Sunday, when we recap whatever happens as the Rockets play the Jazz in Salt Lake City on Saturday evening. If you want more coverage before then, though, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Show us on there at Locked On Rockets. And also check out our Locked On NBA Net handle on both Twitter and Instagram. That's the curated feed from experts across the NBA here at our Locked On Podcast Network, with the Rockets playing the Jazz tonight. Their expert is David Locke, the radio voice of the team, the godfather of the network. So if you want to see his tweets, well, you can follow him at Locked On Sports. But if you want to see experts, not just who the Rockets are playing, but across the association, and they've got some great coverage, follow that Locked On NBA Net feed. And because it's curated, you will get everything, your one-stop shop for expert NBA analysis in each market. Beyond that, a few other plugs I want to toss out. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. The odds are wherever you listen to your podcast, you can find us here at Locked On Rockets, because we're part of a great distribution network at the Locked On Podcast Network. So please subscribe if you've not already. Leave 5-star reviews. That's how you get the benefit of getting episodes right when they come out, even before I can post them on Twitter. And we get the benefit of boosting our subscriber figures and our ratings so that we can look attractive to potential advertisers. By the way, if you could help us by advertising yourself, that'd also be great. Email me at lockdownrockets@gmail.com. We've got some great introductory specials. But yeah, even if you can't do that, leave a 5-star review, subscribe. That's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model rolling as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. And beyond the usual platforms, if you're working with a smart speaker or any sort of voice assistant provider, just say play podcast Locked On Rockets, and you can find our most recent episode that way as well. So once again, the unhappy final Friday night from Denver, Nuggets 136, Rockets 122, Houston back in action Saturday night against the Utah Jazz in Salt Lake City. We'll be breaking that down early Sunday at Locked On Rockets. Come back then for more right here at your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.